And look who's coming up.
Welcome to the Bat Flip Crazy Podcast with your host, Toby G.
Hello and welcome to episode 246 of the Batflip Crazy Podcast, where you always find enthusiastic, data-driven, and fantasy analysis and strategy. I am your host, Toby. This is edition number 150. That's right, 150 of Bubba and the Batflip. I'm coming at you with our outfield preview or re-preview as we get closer to the season. So hope you enjoy it. Hope your drafts are going well. Hope your research is going well. Let's get this party started.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 150. Continuing our positional reviews for the 2023 fantasy baseball season, heading to the outfield on tonight's episode. Maybe talk a little barf as well. All that fun stuff. You can check me out on Twitter at BDIntric. And my co-host is always on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well. Bubba, I was saying beforehand, daylight savings time has just really destroyed me. I'm exhausted, but... I know everybody tuned in for a fantasy baseball podcast, but this is going to be an anti-daylight savings time. This is really an anti-spring forward. Can't we always just fall back?
I think we're done doing it, aren't we? Isn't that like the last hurrah, or I don't know.
I think I read something that it's like, yeah, I don't know if it's gone. Yeah. But no, it was great. We had the barf draft on Saturday. That was a lot of fun. It was great to see you. We got to have a chance to hang out in our little corner over there. So it was fantastic. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, it was fun. We got about 10, 11 of us out of the league there drafting live. That was fun seeing some familiar faces and some new faces that we hadn't seen in a while. We had our little corner missing Eno. That was the only part of the corner that was missing. But typical draft where you had one pick right next to me. So that was fun. Just the entire draft. We kept the turn moving quick. That was the goal.
I think we did a good job of staying out of each other's way for the most part. I think there was maybe one towards the end where you got me. I can't remember. I know who it was. Actually, it was two people. I'm kind of angry now.
Uh-oh. Jeez. Who are they? Let's talk. Who are the
two? If you'll remember in my draft, I didn't draft an outfielder till the 13th round.
Yeah.
So I was in rough shape. So I was trying to cobble it together. I like Jose Siri. I like Avi Garcia. Those are the two ones that I was referencing right there. But I also like the guys that I got. I got Moncada there. This is round 20 and Matt's in round 21, I think. So, yeah, so that was enjoyable. It was kind of like, it was a weird draft for me because as people know and consistently remind me, I do pocket aces, but I didn't do that. I only had that one. I drafted Garrett Cole because he was there at 14. But I didn't draft another pitcher until round six, I think, and only had three starters through 15. So I was really kind of focused on starters and outfielders there for a little bit, trying to kind of fill in. So it was good, though. It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a different draft for myself as well, drafting 15th. I even told you when we were walking from the parking garage, I'm like, I hate this pick. I don't want this pick. This is not what I want, like, for prepping and everything. But it worked out. A lot of similar, like, thoughts to you is I had two outfielders early, but then I didn't really draft another one until round 13. I had three starting pitchers through nine rounds. First one was taken in round 5. Didn't take another starting pitcher till round 18. From round 18 on, it was all pitchers and outfielders for me. So it was definitely a different draft. But all in all, I'm actually kind of happy with it, especially for a 15-team league. Got some depth. We'll see how it plays out. But what's your overall thoughts on your squad?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was something different, which was fun. And I mean, you got Cease at 75 as your SP1. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous if you think about it. Mm-hmm. For me, it was really like an opportunity to get some players that I don't have quite yet. Like I got Bo Bichette, who I don't have. I have Matt Olson, which was a little bit different than I usually do it, but you know, ended up doing well. I've mentioned before, I'm really trying to kind of keep it more of an open mind this year in terms of players and kind of trusting values. And obviously I do my own analysis and I just look at my sheet and, you know, make picks based on that. But it's been an interesting experience to kind of build teams like that and realize that, yeah, there is more flexibility than I think that I've mentioned it before. Like, I think I'm pretty rigid, like in my drafting in the past, and I can see that I can be more flexible and still build teams that I really like. And I think that was really helpful. I think that's one thing that's been helpful about the first few drafts I've done. You know, I did TGFBI, I did this, I did the DCs. I imagine there's only a few players where I have multiple shares of them across those teams, just because I'm trying to figure out and finagle and see kind of what things can look like for some of the bigger drafts down the road. So I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. A lot of guys I usually don't have a share of, or I don't want. Like, I did like a fades episode recently, and like, I'm not in on Jazz Chisholm, but he was at the end of round three. So I was like, okay, I'll take him at pick 45. That sounds great. You mentioned Dylan Cease. I don't want anything to do with Dylan Cease, but at pick 75, that's like 30, almost 40 picks past his ADP. All right, we're going to talk shop there. Kyle Wright was new for me. I jumped way up for Rowdy Tellez, but apparently he was going to be gone pretty quickly if I didn't. So yeah, that was one of those things. I just started kind of at that point, it was like, just go get my guys, fill my roster out, and make things work. So in the end, I was overall pretty happy with it. But yeah, definitely some different build compared to normal, but it has the depth where I need it, and at least I think I need it. I have a lot of relievers. That's kind of part of the plan going in with the kind of shortened week, is take those relievers and then build from there. So we'll see how that plays out as well. Should be a fun league. Should, like always, Barf is fun. We need to do a lot better than a second to last in the Earth rankings, according to you, Justin Mason. But shout out to Justin Mason. It was fun between me and you, Toby, just hearing him tilt as one of us would take his picks over and over again. And it was pretty glorious, to say the least.
For sure. Yeah, actually, I was drafting based on Justin's ADP. I was just solely my one purpose for the draft was just to take all his players. No, I'm looking at your team. You've got a lot of really nice guys on there, you know, that I like a lot as well. So not just those two that I mentioned, but, you know, some really nice pieces you got there towards the back end. I feel like I got a little loose towards the end. Like, one of my picks, my round 27 pick, has already been demoted to AAA, Christian and Encarnacion Strand. Obviously, you know, you're kind of hoping for something, but in a fab league, it's like, does that really make sense? Like, I'm not going to hold on to him, you know, like, he'll be gone with the first fab period before the season even starts. So feels like a little bit of a wasted pick there. And I picked Zach Veen towards the end, and I was kind of like, I don't think there's any shot that he's really going to make the club either. So I'm kind of like, maybe it's one of those situations where you're hoping to get a little lucky with something like that. But I think there's enough talent there that you need to be a little bit more judicious in making some of those picks. So I think there was a couple of mistakes on my end there, because I look at who some other people drafted and I'm like, I could have gone in that direction instead. So, oh well.
No, you still can make it work. And those are the times to take chances. You took chances there, like in round 26. You got Brad Boxberger, your guy, who's already been announced as the co-closer with Fulmer. So,
has that been announced?
That was announced today on The Athletic. If that was announced on, say, Friday, he probably goes a lot sooner than round 26.
Huh. So
there's a win for you.
Guess what? I knew that was going to happen. You want to know why? Because people love the box gifts.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
More box
like people love the box gifts. People love names where all you need is emojis. You don't need letters. Letters are such a like ridiculous concept if you think about it. Like, you got to throw, what is that? B-O-X-B. I think he's an E-R-G-E-R. E-R-G-E-R. That's nine letters that you got to throw together. I got two emojis I can put together and say the same thing. And so that for me is really efficiency, you know, personified. But that's nice to see that happened. I've got him in a few other places as well. I got him in TGFBI too, and I only drafted one closer there. So it's nice to have a little bit of of that support there already on that team. Why I really messed up towards the back end is because when you run the fantasy pros after the draft, I lost to Sammy Reed. Sammy Reed had a 97, I think, a 99, a 98 A plus, I think. And I got like a 94 A or 93 A. And it's all because of that back end of that draft where I was just kind of taking shots.
There was a while looking at Jake Crumpler's deal and you were like dominating the draft, like crushing us.
I know. It's quite sad when you think about it. Like, I've already lost in a way. You know, I'm not the preseason. I'm not like North Carolina, to talk a little, men's college basketball. Like, I'm not the preseason AP number one, you know? So can I really go coast to coast? Can I really go start to finish? No, it's too late.
Yeah. I just looked. I got a C from Fantasy Pros. I'm expected to finish 10th in our league. So that makes me feel good, actually. I think I like things to look that direction. One thing I did want to mention is Richard Sands was in our draft. He took Carlos Rodon at 109. For those wondering where, obviously it's just one draft. He's going to go in many other places. But that was the first draft I took part of after the injury, and he fell to 109. Still a little rich for me, but that's probably close to where he's going to be going. That's probably about right, all things considered. Other than that, it was kind of business as usual. Some guys were going high, obviously, just because that's what happens in these drafts. Some go low. We did see a massive pitching run in rounds 3 and 4. That was a very, very popular situation. Anything else that kind of stood out to you at all with this draft?
No, not really. I think it was an interesting draft because it felt like pitching was a little slow to go off, but then when it did go off, it was gone pretty early. And so, we've been using DC ADP and stuff like that, I think, to run a lot of the drafts. And, you could use online, you could use online championship as well, but it's a 12. And so that really impacts as well, like team construction and closers and things like that. So it's hard to get it right. And so in a fab draft, it was interesting to see how pitching was moving up there. Again, not necessarily towards the front end. Like in the second round, the first pitcher didn't go until, pick 26, so those are just some examples that was interesting to me to start to get in that level of comfort with taking those starters that you were normally getting in, say round 12, you're now jumping those up to round 10 or, that's going to happen. And the shift is going to be pretty dramatic, I think. And so just trying to be prepared for that, I think, is important.
Yep, most definitely. So, yeah, it was fun. It was a definite learning experience in this draft to get things going. Like Allie Rushman went before Will Smith and Salvi Perez. That was a little bit of a surpriser there. Toby got his two catchers early, if anybody's curious. That did happen, as we would expect from Mr. Toby over there. Yeah, other than that, I guess business as usual type deal, but definitely some interesting pockets that you can see here. And if you guys want to see the boards and everything, just let us know or go check out Justin's feed. He did a live feed of the draft. It's over there, and get all the goodies to check it out. And I have been using OCADP for a lot of my analysis. We're still using DC for this to keep it 15 team, but the OCs, it's crazy because like we're tonight for outfield, we're using March 6th to March 14th. There's been 8 DCs finished. In that same time period in OCs, there's been 22.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's wild. Different because they're doing so many live. It's like 3 or 4 a day almost. It's pretty crazy, all things considered there. But let's talk outfield. Let's review our preview of the outfield here. Any initial changes to your thoughts on attacking the outfield in drafts? I know you just talked about how you didn't take – like your outfield was so depleted until later in the draft in this one. Is there an idea of maybe attacking it sooner? How are you going about the outfield?
Yeah, I think outfield's kind of it's kind of tough, and I only say that because I do think that it's pretty well priced throughout the draft. I think there's some pockets of players who maybe should be doing better or should be going a little bit higher, but again, it's hard to identify the players that they should really be going higher than. I really like the top two outfielders in Ronald Acuña and Aaron Judge. I think Acuña is kind of my one most likely, if I were to get that. And, I just think there's a potential for a real big year there, for him. Judge, the projections love Judge. You know, they have him as the second ranked player. So in terms of outfielders, I mean, Tucker going early, or J-Rod, like, you know, he's a little mispriced according to my values, but, you know, Yordan's right there. Soto's a little mispriced, but still at top 15. So there's all these, there's all these players that I think are, yeah, really good at the top, and you can't really go wrong necessarily with them. And then and then there's a little bit more red on the spreadsheet. And so it really is like kind of these pockets where some guys are maybe standing out a little bit, you know, in different spots in the draft. But it's a little gnarly, honestly. Like, I find it hard. I find myself in some instances, like, you know, like with Barf, like where I didn't have any outfielders through round 10, and I was really just kind of going value picking. And, you know, there's something to be said for that, right? Like, just kind of taking the value that's on the board. But, you know, those guys, even though they show up as values, you're a little less sure about what level of value that they're going to provide to you. So, so I think it's just a matter of kind of attacking some of those pockets of again, quote unquote, value, where maybe the projections seem to be a little bit higher than the market is on different players. So yeah, that's kind of my approach, has been to focus more on those areas and kind of take what the draft gives me.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And you definitely did that at Barf. And I'm trying to get one or two early, kind of like I did in Barf, and then I can piece it together later. I'm not forcing the hand. Like, I did one, I think it was DC or something, and I had like four outfielders early, and then it doesn't hamstring you in a fab league. But it's like I did, like, an example would be with Ryan. He did his Tout Wars draft. He had five outfielders in the first 10 rounds. It really makes it difficult when you're drafting later on to, like, it forces you not to take an outfielder essentially, because you're already full in a fab league. So you have to avoid those pockets, like you're saying, where you could have got some value. Now you're taking other positions. So, like usual, it's the easy answer is know the player pool. That's just kind of how it goes. But there is something to it. Like, you have this, like, really good range, like you mentioned, then a pretty good range, then a good range. And it's just like, is it worth taking one of those ranges instead of another position type thing? And then maybe take two of the potential values later type thing instead of a shortstop then or something along those lines. That's the name of the game. So I think those elite ones are just so, so elite. That's why I'm trying to make sure I get one or two of those top end outfielders. And then I'm cool with kind of just playing the game, kind of playing chicken almost throughout a lot of the middle of the draft and see where it goes and fill the rest of my roster probably before then. We'll see. Every draft is different. Every spot of the draft is different. Things will fall to you. Like, you had Bichette fall to you at pick 17. That's pretty darn awesome. Like, things I had, you know, I had Cease fall to 75. Like, there's things that'll change your mindset on who you're taking, and it could totally change the entire game plan. But for now, I'm trying to leave with some outfielders early if I can. That's kind of the plan of attack.
Yeah. That's one thing I think I've said that I'm trying to do differently. I'm trying to be a little position agnostic in the sense that, like, you know, I want to take the best player. So, like, if I'm taking two middle infielders, you know, before I'm taking outfielders, then that's fine. Right. And so when I find that happening, honestly, like, I end up having a pretty limited number of outfielders early on, but I did enjoy building with Judge. You know, it was fun to start off that way, as long as you can piece together pitching, you know?
And that's the thing is I'm with you on, you know, being, you know, position agnostic, but there's just the way you can build your team with one of the big boys is a different animal in the situation. But I'm kind of with you. Like, I did take my two early, but, you know, in the old days, I would have made sure to get like a third by like round 12, or like, I would have been like so focused on getting more outfielders, right? I said, you know what, that guy's not what I want right here. It's not going to fit. Let's go take this guy instead, and so on and so forth, and see where it goes. So I'm with you there. Yeah, you were much more agnostic than I was, but it worked out. So it's a beautiful thing. There is a lot of those kind of like 10 to 15 home run, 10 to 15 stolen base guys later on that you can kind of piece it together with if you hit it just right. Maybe move them up a round or two if you have to, but you can definitely piece it together and see what happens. Sure. All right, let's do some ADP debates. Over the last, I mentioned, 8 days, there's been eight drafts, eight DCs taking place, and I just got a, you know, a handful throughout the draft here. First one I have is Mookie Betts. He's the fifth outfielder off the board at pick 9.5. Juan Soto, the sixth outfielder off the board at pick 10. So they're going right next to each other in drafts. Kind of similar profiles, but also kind of different profiles. Juan Soto coming off a rough season, especially when he went to San Diego. You got Mookie Betts coming off a phenomenal MVP-like season in Los Angeles, but a different Los Angeles lineup exists now around him. How do you look at Mookie Betts versus Juan Soto?
Yeah, I mean, they're back. They're right next to each other in the ADP spreadsheet as not good values early on, not guys you should be drafting. I like Betts here a lot more. When I think about, I just think I like the context. I like the skills a little bit more. I think with Soto, there's been a pretty wide variance in terms of like the batting average that he's producing. I think Mookie at the top of his lineup. Soto walks a lot, which is great for his runs, but it can sometimes limit a little bit, you know, the balls that he's putting in play and some of the counting stats, I think, as a result of that. So, you know, I'm probably not taking either one of them. I think if I did take one of them, it would probably be Mookie, just because he has provided such consistently fantastic value. I think, you know, as much as you want to buy into or not buy into the drive line narrative, if you will, I do think that there's something to be said for a guy who's already won some MVPs and is trying to improve, or at least listening to his team that wants him to improve in some areas. And so I think he's a guy who I feel really good. He's been announced as the leadoff hitter. I feel like you're going to get a crap ton of runs from him. You know, that power, whether or not he can, you know, kind of work that power anymore, I think is, you know, like whether he's gonna be able to repeat on the power front is one question. But I think the speed there with the new steals rules will help him out a lot. And one thing with Soto is like right field is not a great, like he's kind of gotten the double whammy of like the new ball doesn't travel as well to the opposite field or center field where he's got a lot of his power. And San Diego is one of the worst left-handed hitting power parks in all of baseball. And so I think for those, some of those contextual factors, I would go with Mookie, but you know, you can see clearly why people are interested in them. They're both pretty much top 15 guys. So if you like them, do it.
Yeah. It's definitely a grasping at straws to kind of make a pick between these two. But if I had to pick the two, I'm picking Mookie as well. I think there's more consistent power possibly, even though Soto on a ceiling year would have more. The batting average, I feel much more comfortable with Mookie. The runs scored, much more comfortable with Mookie. It's just Mookie also, I think he's going to take a step back from this past year. Like, he was so good this past year. It's the first time he's ran like he did in a while. Like, is that a sustainable thing? Maybe it is in this new environment. Who knows? That's something to wonder about. But the average, you know, in his career is even a little farther down. So he had a great year, phenomenal year. Still going to be good. He's a top 15 guy, like you said. The thing with Soto is his ceiling is like a top three pick, but we've seen his floor be like a second to third round turn pick. It's been a wide variance, as you mentioned. And the walks in a world life sense and an OBP sense is outstanding, but that's the biggest bugaboo I have. Just like you said, that's fewer home runs, fewer RBIs, like stuff like that. The average, you know, technically doesn't get changed at all. So that's good and bad, I guess, when you look at it. So like grasping at straws, I got Mookie over Soto for pretty much the same reasons you do. I'm probably not taking either, as you said. Like, I'm still a guy that believes Yordan's going to be fine. I'll take the 40 home run dude that hits almost 300. Like, I'll take that dude and figure out my steals later if I need
to. You took him in the draft.
I did. I plant my flag on that one. I have a lot of Yordan shares. So I'm like, I'm still believing that he's going to be fine. We're going to see. It could be a completely disastrous situation. But that's just a game changer type bat with a guy like Yordan. He's an Aaron Judge that doesn't steal bases. That's the way I look at it. And that's obviously steals is big. It's a very big factor in Aaron Judge. I'm not going to discount that, but Yordan can put up those kind of numbers. Vlad Guerrero type guy. Like, it's pretty impressive. So, yeah, it'd be Betts over Soto for me, but probably not getting either one of them, to tell you the truth. Like, I'd almost even do what you did. I would take Gerrit Cole over those two if I had the choice in that scenario, if it came down to it. So, Yeah, same for me. All right, this
he's
one.
He's got to do more yoga.
More yoga. That's the key. Yoga narrative. That would help him a ton. I'm telling you, it'd be beautiful. Sure. This one, I'm really curious to see where it goes. I have a hunch, but we'll see. Cedric Mullins, 15th outfielder out the board, picked 51.5. Corbin Carroll, everyone's favorite new toy, 16th outfielder at pick 55. So going right around each other. Both have like this little power and speed situation. The hype train behind Carroll. Then you got Mullins 2 years ago, 30-30. Still had a really good year last year. How do you look at Mullins versus Corbin Carroll?
Yeah, I don't want either one of them, honestly. I hope Carroll goes super early just because, you know, it's harder to return value on that if he does do well. You know, I think we put way too much stock in kind of like hitting performances, you know, especially this year. Like, you know, I see all these tweets about like Carroll's like max EV, and I see it about his speed, and like none of that has changed from last year. Like he had those same skills, you know, when he was in the major leagues last year. So it's just easier pitching that he and everybody else is facing, and even easier pitching than you would traditionally see during spring training, because so many of the top starters and even bullpen arms are playing in the WBC. So I'm not really sure that how we feel about him should change necessarily. There's obviously the contract that he signed, which, you know, kind of guarantees that the guy is going to get everyday playing time. And I think that's great, but given the injury history, like, can you really project him for more than 550 plate appearances, particularly the way he plays, where he plays? It feels a little bit rash to put him above that. And then when you look at all of the projections from, you know, Steamer, which is usually glowing on prospects, to, you know, any system, really, you look at it, and I think they are, even with more than 550 plate appearances, they're projecting like the least conservative projection is Zips right now at 580 plate appearances, 253, 16 home runs, and 20 steals. Now he could obviously like go through that. It's projections have missed plenty on rookies. They've also gotten a lot of rookies right, and I think oftentimes we remember the ones that they got wrong, as opposed to the ones that they necessarily got right. But, you know, when I look at like what the projections say, I mean, Cedric Mullins, I like, for me, really would be the case here. The spreadsheet actually really likes him. I don't like him that much, but it has him as the 33rd best player at going at an ADP of 50, and all of the projections. So you plug in Zips at its strongest projection at 16 home runs and 20 steals, right, over 580 plate appearances. Like, that's 14 fewer steals than Mullins got last year, and just as much power. And so Mullins has kind of been there, already done that. And he's also plays in a better hitting environment for lefties. Chase Field, I think, plays as one of the worst hitting parks at this point in time. Like, we all remember that Corbin Carroll, like, 109 mile per hour laser to dead center that hits off the wall. So for me, I'd go Mullins here. I'm not really interested in either one at this spot, but I would go Mullins pretty easily over Carroll.
Yeah, it's Mullins for me, and I like Carroll a lot. I liked him a lot when he wasn't around pick 50. When he was like in the 65 to 70 range, was a little more attractive to me. Pick 50 is tough because I've either already had Randy Arozarena early, so I don't really need to do this, or like said Mullins, or I'll take Adelis Garcia a little later on. That's kind of like my three dudes where I'm trying for the power speed outfielder if you don't get one of the first ones. But I do like Cedric. It's not easy to find a 30-plus stolen base guy as you go through the draft like this. He's one of the last guys you can get there. There still might be 20 home runs in that bat, if not 15, which is not bad. But if you get a 20-30 dude here, which would be really good, this Baltimore lineup's getting better and better. So I think the runs scored at the top of that order could be pretty nice. I know there was some platoon concerns with him last season. I'm not going to buy into that too much if he's still hitting. It was late in the year. Who knows what it was for? I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason when you're the Baltimore Orioles and he's one of your best players. I know he can't hit lefties great, but it doesn't make sense to me to take him out of the lineup, put him down in the order or something. You can still have him out there. But with Carroll, it's just a large amount of variance with him. The talent's elite. He's like the number one prospect in most prospects reports. That's true. There's a power speed there. But how well will that develop? You mentioned the ballpark. This D-backs team's going to be better this year, but how good are they going to be? What's the protection like around them? Is it gonna be, are they going to trade guys? There's a lot of questions in Arizona, a lot of them. So for me, I'm going with Cedric Mullins as well. Corbin Carroll could easily prove us both wrong. There's no doubt about that. He is that talented. It's just going to take a heck of a season. I think the steals will be there. The power is what I'm kind of still not believing to be there full-time with Carroll. Could be totally wrong. I'll take the L on that if I am, but give me Ced Mullins as well. Big, big Cedric Mullins fan, especially in that realm if you can get him after a guy like Corbin Carroll. All right, we got a three-pack here. We got Eloy Jimenez, 18th outfielder off the board at pick 71. George Springer, the 19th outfielder at pick 76. And Teoscar Hernandez, the 20th outfielder around pick 79. So you got these three guys going between pick 70 and 80. And a lot of similarities to me in these three guys. So how do you look at Eloy, Springer, and Teoscar?
Yeah, really, this is like a two-player debate for me, mostly.
Who's the one you're out on?
I'm out on Eloy. I'm not super interested in Eloy. Obviously, we have kind of the history of injury concerns. And again, like, players are not injured until they're injured. But the most plate appearances we've seen from him in a single season now is like 504. Right. So like, we don't even know how his body holds up over the course of a full season. When you look at, like, let's say you combine the last two seasons to give him 550 plate appearances, you have like about a 270 batting average, 26 home runs, 63 runs, 91 RBI, which is certainly like pretty decent, but it's a pretty heavy on the counting stats profile for me, and particularly in RBI. Whereas with Springer and Teoscar, I think you're getting a much more well-rounded profile with the new stolen base rules. You know, you could see both of them taking a little bump up. They're not elite steals guys, but you can definitely see them going, you know, into double digits, maybe even, you know, 15 or so steals for either one of them. I know that Teoscar's sprint speed has held up really well. For Springer, you know, he's going to provide pretty much everything, you know, and obviously he's had some injury issues as well. But I think you've seen a lot more consistency from him throughout his career. He's at the top of a really good lineup. And so I think that's a really like pretty optimal space that he's in right there. I think similarly with Teoscar, he's not at the top of that lineup, but he's right in the middle of it. I think Seattle is underrated as a home run ballpark. It doesn't play great as like a run scoring environment. Generally, it's pitcher friendly, but it does provide enough home runs. So I don't necessarily think Teoscar is going to be hurt by that. He was really good when he came back from injury. So I'm not really concerned that there's been like a precipitous fall in some of the skills there. So I think with either one of them, they both show up as like decent values, like nothing out of this world. You know, Springer player 68, Teoscar player 70. You know, when they're going at the ADPs that you mentioned before. So slight values. I've drafted Teoscar once. I haven't gotten Springer yet. So it's just a matter of kind of what I'm looking for at this point in the draft. But this is kind of that window where that window opens for some outfielders that seem to be undervalued a little bit by the market.
Yeah, for me, it's actually a close three. Like, Eloy would be my third, which stinks because back in November, I was all about, you know, the way he played in the second half when he came back from injury, when he was strictly the DH, he just tore up everything. If he DHs again, that's also promising, of course. But, you know, like you said, do you want to take the chance? Like, he's going to be awesome. He's not going to run at all. Zero running options at all with Eloy. That's been proven throughout his career. He will not run. But when you talk about these three guys, probably the best batting average out of the three. The dude just hits for average, like really good batting average. So there is a lot to like there. I think it's very interesting. But for me, it's Teoscar at number one. I think like this is a dude we used to take in like what, round three or four maybe in the past, like when he was coming off that monster year. His ADP was a bit higher than this, let's put it that way. I love Teoscar. I think he's still got the 25 plus home runs in that bat. He had 25 last year in a short season. Maybe he gets you 30. Like, that's big. I think he gets back to running more this year. off the injury. He's looked great. This you know, between the WBC and spring, looks healthy. That's all you can ask for. He can hit for average. There's just a ton to like there, especially in that Seattle lineup. It's going to be very, very good. I'm not worried about him going to that ballpark. We've seen guys like Mitch Haniger still hit 30-plus home runs and stuff, so I'm not worried about Teoscar having issues there. So I'm a big, big fan of Teoscar this year, as long as, like, all these guys, it's the fun part about all three, they all have injury concerns. They've all, like, shown the propensity to get hurt once in a while. It's, like, some goofy stuff. So Teoscar's one for me. Springer's two, and Springer's a guy that – you know, 25 and 14 last year was awesome. 267, pretty much hit 265 three straight years. So that's kind of the wheelhouse he's starting to go into, it looks like. But, you know, 20-plus home runs back-to-back seasons, that works. If he can stay healthy, played 133 games last year. That's the most since 2018, though. So that's kind of a, you know, wait-and-see situation. But whenever he's played at least 120 games, he gets you over 20 home runs, over five steals. Maybe he runs even more at 14 steals last year, as I think the most since 2015. So it might be a little more than you'd want, but 25 and 10, hitting 260, not bad. I still like Teoscar over George Springer with Eloy coming in third, and that just hurts to say because I think he's legit a beast, but the lack of steals will kind of take him down for me. But, yeah, Teoscar, George, Eloy for me in that order. All right, a fun one here. We got Tyler O'Neill at ADP 107, 25th outfielder. And then one of the fun new toys that everybody likes, Taylor Ward, the 26th outfielder at pick 108. It's going about a pick and a half apart right now. How do you look at Tyler O'Neill and Taylor Ward?
Yeah, I lean towards O'Neill in this one for sure. You know, it's like we need the yoga narrative again, you know, for our buddy Tyler O'Neill. I really hope he's been doing some stretching instead of some weightlifting in the off season. But, you know, even in a bad year last year with Tyler O'Neill, you pretty much got 15-15 in a pretty considerably shortened season. So I feel like the floor is actually pretty high for him. He's a Gold Glove caliber outfielder as well. So he's providing a lot of, I think there's a lot of job security there. I think the discussion within the Cardinals to me seems much more like what positions our players going to play as opposed to, you know, whether Tyler O'Neill is going to play on a regular basis or not. So I really like him. He shows up as a really good value in the spreadsheet, which, you know, I always love to see. With Taylor Ward, he's interesting because I think he's one of the ones where I really do like him a lot. You know, I think everybody's very clearly pointed out about how Taylor Ward, you know, really struggled because of the injury and, you know, before and then after, and once he felt better, he was a much better player. He's got incredibly good plate discipline. He's got really good contact skills. He makes really high quality contact. He's going to be hitting leadoff in that really nice lineup that they have there, at least top end of that lineup with the Angels. So I think he's in a position to succeed pretty considerably. So I can see why they're going pretty close to one another. I think kind of the power speed combo of O'Neill puts it in his favor for me, but I can see where people can see Ward being that guy that kind of takes that next step and maybe with a little bit of speed with the change in the steel rules.
Yeah, this one's close for me. I've been leaning Ward in drafts. I have both. I have shares of both. I like what we saw from Ward last year. Everything you mentioned, what people are talking about, you know, his on-base skills are even good. It walked over 10%, which was nice. Hitting at the top of that Angels lineup that, you know, God forbid, Mike Trout just stays healthy for a full season. And some of these other guys, the lineup's much better than it has been in a long time. So you give me like 275-ish average with 20-plus home runs, maybe 25-plus homers, and maybe he runs into 10 stolen bases. I love that from Taylor Ward. I think that's a really possible situation with him. The flip side, you mentioned with Tyler O'Neill, year removed from 34, 15, and 286. That's outstanding. Watching the batting average drop last year, like 5%, and the walk rate jump, like almost 3% from 2021 is promising. The injuries are just horrible. Still stole 14 bags, like you mentioned, which was nice. I guess the biggest concern I have with O'Neill, and it's probably just petty concern, but there's a lot of outfielders in St. Louis right now. A lot of outfielders in St. Louis. Like, the fact he's even competing for a job, I know he's playing for Canada right now in the WBC, but like they're saying center field's up to him and Carlson. Like, are we really talking about that? Is that really an option? Like, how is Carlson platooning with anybody named Tyler O'Neill? So that's crazy to me. I like them both. I'm going to lean Ward in this one. But like I said, I have shares of both. I can see the arguments for both. But give me Taylor Ward. I guess if you want to believe O'Neal's healthy, this is way too low of a pick for him, like you're saying. I'm with you there. Like, it's way too low. If he plays a full season healthy, you're going to get crazy value at this spot. But I'll take Taylor Ward and just, you know, hope for the best. The next one here, we got two leadoff bats, or top of the order bats potentially. Stephen Kwan, the 28th outfielder at pick 117.5. Jake McCarthy, the 29th outfielder at 119. You know, two guys that run a lot. Stephen Kwan will have an upside in certain things, where McCarthy will have upsides in others. So how do you look at Kwan and McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think Kwan does enough, like, at this spot, you know, where he steals a decent amount, but not enough, you know, like 19 steals. He's got 6 home runs. I mean, there's plenty of people going later in drafts that have 6 home runs and 19 steal potential. Excuse me, Bubba. Thank you. And so I really think that it's too early for him, you know, and I think the difference for me between him and McCarthy is that McCarthy is a truly elite steals guy. You know, he's really fast. He's a really good base runner. He, I think, is a player who is, you know, he doesn't have a ton of power, but he's going to get double digit home runs. And, you know, people talk about like, oh, he's, you know, doesn't have this great barrel rate or anything. Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. But Stephen Kwan has one of the slowest bats in all of baseball. Like, if there was a tweet going around from the Sabre conference where they looked at bat speed, and Kwan was in the bottom 5 in Major League Baseball for bat speed. So unless there's a dramatic improvement in that underlying skill, I don't think it's changing. He had 7 barrels and 6 home runs, you know, last year, like 7 barrels, 1.7% barrel rate for Kwan there. Obviously, with the batting average and speed, he's contributing in 2 categories, which is beneficial, but it also might be the 2 categories that are helped the most by the rules this year. And so I think it's less a story of, do you want McCarthy or do you want Kwan here necessarily? But like, there's got to be better options, in my opinion, than Stephen Kwan at this point, because he doesn't really, like, I guess the batting average would be an elite tool, but I don't know. He just doesn't do enough for me. And I think he's the type of player where, yeah, I mean, you could very easily see him batting, you know, 9th early on in the season if he struggles. So we'll see, though. I could definitely be wrong on that one. I mean, you know, he's obviously makes a ton of contact and puts the ball in play. Maybe that with the shift rules, he's hitting 320 instead of, you know, 300 or whatever. But yeah, I'm just not really interested in this type of profile necessarily right here.
Yeah, Stephen Kwan has my attention, I'll be honest. We're going to differ on this one. I think a guy that's going to give you, at this point in the draft, after pick 100, he can get you a better than 300 average, potentially, especially with the shift rules and whatnot. He could steal you 20-plus bases, which wouldn't surprise me at all. And at the top of that order, with J-Ram and company, could score over 100 runs. That's a category that we just overlooked too many times, the run scored, which, you know, maybe it just happens with a lot of guys. But to be able to get 100 runs scored, hit over 300, and steal over 20 bags, I think that's a nice little look when you got Jake McCarthy, who, yeah, he ran wild. There's no denying that. He's done that throughout the minors, but no real power either. He's going to hit like 3rd in that lineup, so he's not going to score a ton of runs. He's going to have to hit for average. So it feels like it's like a 3-2 situation when you look at the stats there. Again, both these guys have a lot of variance in their outcomes when we look at both of them. So it's kind of like find your guy, plant your flag, take who you want situation. I think there's just a lot more to like with Kwan as an overall hitter, where Jake McCarthy, good. He's good. Don't get me wrong, but I think, and you know, the 8 home runs in like half a season, so maybe he's a 15 home run guy. I could be downplaying that, but I think Kwan still has the average, the run scored, and the stolen bases that I'm a big, big fan of. And so I would take him over Jake McCarthy here. I don't really have a ton of either. I think I have Kwan in like some best ball OBP formats because I love him in that. He's great in that. But, you know, I'm not running to get him. I'm not running to get either one of these guys, honestly. I'd hope to not be chasing steals already at this point in the draft. But, it happens. So if you are, both of them could give them to you. Maybe McCarthy's your guy then if you want steals. Maybe he's a 30 steal guy. So that's something to keep in mind. But I'll take Stephen Kwan. All right, this next one, not the biggest fan of this range, but I'm curious because some smart people talking about some players here. 30th outfielder off the board, Chris Bryant at 124. 31st outfielder, Anthony Santander at 128.5. And the 32nd outfielder, Nick Castellanos at 132. So they're all going about 8 picks apart. How do you look at these three?
Man, Chris Bryant, we're still talking about him, huh?
Yeah, that's why I don't like this range. I know, but the fact they're going close and some smart people are starting to buy in on him, so I wanted to throw him in the mix, basically.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. Chris Bryant was my Vlad Jr. before Vlad Jr. He's what happens when you're right on a player. You know, it's just like radio silence or whatever. I'm not really interested in Chris Bryant. You know, I think he signed with the Rockies, and you know. I don't know. I just think that it's not there with Chris Bryant. Santander, I like okay. I think he's going like right about where he should be. If you're looking for a power bat and they disappear pretty quickly, I think you can do a lot worse than Santander. You know, he makes a lot of contact. He could be benefited in the batting average department by the shift changes, and the power is super legit. He's a switch hitter. He's playing every day. So I feel like Santander of this crew that you mentioned is the one that I would go with. And then with Castellanos, I could definitely see it. I mean, you know, he's been going pick 60, pick 70 the last couple years, you know, had an injury riddled first season with the Phillies. It's a great lineup. You know, you could definitely see it working out for Castellanos. But I also just think that, you know, there's too many years of disappointment with Castellanos. Like, he's really only produced, it's only like 1 or 2 years really where he's been able to put it all together in a meaningful way. Cincinnati, like that Cincinnati year, he had a monster year. And then the 2019 year as well with the bouncy ball, you know, was great for him too. I guess 27 and 2018 were all right with Detroit as well, but the ball is a different story. You know, he really benefited from that Cincinnati Reds stadium from Great American Small Park. I think we talked about that actually last year in our analysis. We were highlighting the fact that so many of his home runs came at Great American Small Park. I'm not really interested in him there. The spreadsheet doesn't really like him either. So that's enough for me to kind of stay away from him. So I'd go Santander here. But honestly, not generally going after an outfielder at this point.
Yeah, we're on the same boat here. Santander be my dude, because at this point, you got a big-time power bat, as you mentioned. There's a few others. There's like the Renfros, the Stantons, some of these guys still out there. But Santander is a legit power bat. You know, we saw the moonshot live when we were drafting that he hit off of Sandy Alcantara, which was beautiful to see. Like, it doesn't count for our stats, but it was fun to watch. I do like Santander if you do need the power there. Casty would be my number two. It hurts me because I think I have zero shares of Casty, and I could see him bouncing back because, you know, Great American Small Park is the bandbox, but Citizens Bank is not that great either. Like, it's a good hitter's park as well, and it just feels like, you know, the first year in Philly, the injuries, let's bounce back and get good. Still a great lineup to hit in. Wouldn't be shocked if he gets back to like 25 home runs in that ballpark. And at that point, that means he's hitting for average, driving in runs, scoring runs. It's a good value, I think. It's just, will he do it? Here's the question. And yes, no Chris Bryant for me. That's just a token thing. If he does it, congratulations. Otherwise, I'm good. So yeah, Santander, Casty be the two I'd be looking at. Last set of ADP debates I have here, because we don't want to go all night on these. Masataka Yoshida at pick 206 and Andrew Benintendi at pick 208. To me, there's a lot of similarities potentially here, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So how do you see Yoshida versus Benintendi?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of the team construction and risk tolerance. You know, with Yoshida, it looks like the projections think the batting average is going to be there. He's got really great plate skills. He's playing great in the WBC, although it's a little bit challenging right now with just the differing levels of competition that that people are facing. I think it's similar to spring training. I mean, that way until we get into like the you know, quarterfinals, semifinals and stuff. And, but then by that time, you're just looking at small samples in a lot of ways. But more power, less speed, it seems like, in the profile, maybe similar batting average. Whereas with Benintendi, you have, you know, questions, obviously, about the power potential. He's in a better run environment with the White Sox, one of the better home run parks. So you're hoping that will help. But we also hope that the short porch in Yankee Stadium would help as well. And then you also have the steals and the question of whether Benintendi can continue to do that along with the batting average. So I like Andrew Benintendi here probably more just from a team construction standpoint and where I am. But I certainly feel like, and the projections feel like, there's a really high ceiling for Yoshida, which I'm not sure that Benintendi has that anymore. I think we've seen one season where he's kind of been a top 50 player or something.
Yeah, that's the fun with this. Like, do we believe Yoshida comes to the U.S. and in his first year just tears the cover off the baseball? If he does, this is a gift. And that, because he could be just a monster. His average, his OBPs, his power, like, he could just – supposed to hit, like, right around Devers, like, right behind, right before Devers in that lineup. Like, that's going to pay dividends, of course. Could be monstrous for Yoshida. Where Benny, we kind of know who he is. Good average, going to get you 15-plus steals. Should get you 15 plus. I got 15-15 dude with 20-20 potential in that ballpark. Maybe if things really click, I don't know if we'll ever see 20 home runs from him, but if he's ever going to do it, this is the ballpark to do it in. So that'd be the plus for Benintendi. I guess it's more of like the what you know versus the what you don't type situation. Like, we know who Benny is, where Yoshida, we're just speculating on the guy that's torn up the Japanese baseball, which it's good, but we know it's not major league talent. That's been well, you know, talked about. So how does that translate? And that's kind of where you pick your poison. Like, I'll lean Yoshida just because at this point in the draft, I'm willing to take a chance or two. But if you don't want to take a chance, then Benny's totally fine. Like, he's one of the guys I kind of mentioned early on in the show that there's 10 to 15 stolen base and power guys later on in the draft, and Benny's one of them easily. Like, he's a guy if I do miss on outfielders early, I would circle to try to get Benintendi on my roster. I think that's a solid option to have as a deeper outfield choice if you – really need to fill up some outfield spots. But for me, I'll take Yoshida and the gamble that comes with Yoshida at this point in time. All right, let's do a couple late targets here. What are a couple outfielders you're targeting between ADP 300 and 400 later on in drafts?
Yeah, I like the 300 to 400 area a lot more than the 400 plus, which probably isn't too surprising. I think there's a number of players going in this range that can contribute in different ways. You know, Mike Yastrzemski on the Giants, you know, from a power perspective, I think he's one of the later power bats that you have. You know, Trent Grisham as well could be useful, as kind of an everyday player with the Padres. I really like Avi Garcia. I mentioned him before. You know, we were drafting him a lot higher last year. I think the question is whether you think he can kind of mentality wise get back to where he needs to be with the Marlins. Jose Siri, I mentioned before, I also like a lot. You know, there's obviously you have to have a little bit of a batting average cushion to add him to your team. But if you're able to do that, he's the starting center fielder for Tampa Bay. The glove is going to keep him on the field for better or worse for your offense. But I think he can be a 15-15 guy over the course of a full season there. Kike Hernandez, I like a lot. He's got the outfield. He should get the shortstop eligibility soon. And so I think that's a really nice thing to have on your bench. You know, a guy that you can kind of plug and play in good matchups and then have him spot in middle infield or shortstop as well. I think Andrew McCutchen, I haven't drafted him yet, but, you know, he should play most days. And I think there's still a little bit of power speed there. Leody Taveras is interesting, and Bubba Thompson is interesting a little bit. You know, Thompson's probably going to start there, and then Taveras going to take over. Like, we've been waiting for, you know, at least I have for a couple years for Taveras to take that next step. I'm not sure he's really good enough. Maybe the shift helps him a little bit, and the base stealing rules help him a little bit, but I think he's going to be buried in that lineup. And, so it could be beneficial. And at this point in time, like, there's not huge risk, you know, at this range, but every pick is vital and important. And then with Bubba Thompson, he might be a nice guy to draft, like, you know, with one of your last picks and just have him in the lineup for those steals early on in the season and to see how things work. Miles Straw shows up as a really good, value here if he's the starting center fielder and continues to play there, even though he's hitting ninth again, you know, maybe some steals, and at least you're getting three plate appearances per day. Actually, he's after pick 300, so I guess I'll stop there. But there's a lot of them in kind of the late 200s, early 300s that I think are pretty nice, like, you know, Meadows, Hayes, Soler, Thomas, Blackman, Fraley, Margot, and Grichuk, although, you know, you have to be worried about the injury there. Those guys going kind of late 200s are also showing up as pretty nice values there. So I think this is a nice actual spot to get an outfielder or two for your roster. And it's also, yeah, I'll stop talking now.
No, it just proves that this is why you can kind of wait if you either don't get any or get a couple, and then kind of go like, well, I had all pitchers and outfielders from 18, round 18 on, while you took all your outfielders late. You can piece it together here, like post 300. I like Oswaldo Cabrera for the Yankees. Now it looks like he'll be getting a starting gig. I think he's fun. Adam Duvall starting in Boston. I love Yastrzemski, like you mentioned. Obviously, I have a sell who I drafted over the weekend, Jose Siri as well, just for the speed upside there. Enrique Hernandez is another guy I picked up. So all guys I obviously like. I love the Kutch call. I think there's a lot to like with McCutcheon. You know, Josh Lowe, if you want to speculate, I don't hate it because he's playing well. And I think in deeper leagues, 12s, you don't need to speculate on Josh Lowe. You can wait and do the waiver wire there. But we might get another chance at a former top prospect maybe figuring it out per se. So he'd be a guy I look at as well. But there is a lot to like in this range that you can piece it together, as you were saying, throughout your draft. Like, even, you know, some guys are liking Trent Grisham. I'm not there, but some guys are. So something to think about. 400 plus, or anybody standing out to you here?
Yeah, I mentioned Miles Straw. I like him a decent amount. I think Harold Ramirez is interesting. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how they play him. He's obviously got the super high ground ball tendencies, but the high batting average is really nice with a little bit of power. Like, he's got the power in there. He just doesn't elevate enough to make that happen on a consistent basis, but he's got the first and outfield eligibility. So he's a nice little guy to have on your bench, maybe kind of move in and out. I think that I know, like, a lot of smart people are really into Lamont Wade. I don't know. There's a question about it, so maybe we'll dive into him later on. So I'll kind of skip over that. I like Jack Sawinski. You know, he seems like a guy who's going to play and a late power bat. Like, if you look at his power potential, it's pretty far up there. The Fire Eagle, Eddie Rosario, I haven't drafted him yet, but he's in the starting lineup, it looks like, and his eyes seem to be doing a little bit better. He's one to kind of keep a close eye on, I think, because it wasn't too long ago, it was two seasons ago, that he put together some really phenomenal runs where you can have a decent batting average with some power and some speed as well. Kyle Isbell is one of my favorites. You know, I don't know if he'll be like a full year type of guy, but I think early on in the year, he's had a nice spring training. I think he's going to have access to some playing plate appearances early on in the season. I think he can show a little bit of speed, and maybe if he plays well enough, he can kind of stick with it there. Robbie Grossman is interesting if he, you know, isn't part of too much of a platoon there in Texas. You know, he's only 1 year removed from a 2020 spot. So those are some of the guys for me that are kind of standing out. I think, you know, there's always players. What I would be looking at is like, okay, what is the first week of the season looking like? Are there guys that are here who are playing every day that have four games, you know, that first half week of the season to try to maximize plate appearances there, and or looking at the following week, you know, for some good matchups there, and seeing if there's any of the guys that you like in this range that might be able to get off to a hot start because of the schedule they have.
For sure. Yeah, for me, like, I like the Harold Ramirez call quite a bit. AJ Pollock, I'm still a believer in, as long as he's healthy. His second half was actually pretty good. Kyle Stowers is the dude I've been drafting everywhere I can for his power potential in Baltimore. James Outman, I love for the Dodgers. I just don't know if he's going to start the season with the Dodgers, but I think there's a ton to like about him, especially as that team's getting beat up by injuries and just overall production. So James Outman's a dude. I like the Rosario call since he is going to be starting, it looks like, which is a big plus for him, obviously. Yeah, other than that, it's a lot of like what you were saying. Like, I like the Grossman idea, especially if he's going to be starting, you know, 542 ADP. It's pretty sweet, but a lot of these guys, it's a matchup situation. It's like a fourth outfielder that might get some run early type situation. Keep an eye on them. But I like to have maybe only need like one guy after ADP 400, like maybe none. Maybe these are bench bats. That'd be ideal as you head into the deep parts of your draft. All right, we got some listener questions. You guys came through with a handful of them this week, which is very, very nice and always appreciated. So let's kick it off with our friend Shelly V. Late round outfielders, Alec Thomas, TJ Friedel, Avisel Garcia, Bubba Thompson, and Nolan Jones. Who are you out on and who do you love? Is this a group worth the trouble, Toby?
I think it's a nice little group. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I mentioned that I like Avi as a guy who's hitting in the middle of a lineup and should play every day. And we've seen the skills previously. You know, there's always question marks with all of these guys, but he's a nice one. I mentioned Bubba Thompson is kind of an early season guy going for steals while Tavares is out. And again, you never know what is going to happen after that. Nolan Jones, not really. Like, the swing and miss is pretty substantial. And then I think, I don't think so with Nolan Jones, but I could be wrong if he gets like the starting third base job with Ryan McMahon moving over to second or something like that. It's wild that Mike Moustakas, got a job on that team. So I think there are questions there. Who did I miss?
Alec Thomas and TJ Friedel.
Yeah, I think they're both really interesting. I mean, man, Great American Small Park is an elite place to play I don't know how to pronounce his name. Friedel. You know, he's got the power, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, a little bit of batting average in a great ballpark. I don't think you can really improve too much on that situationally. Like, there's the platoon issues, obviously, which you need to account for, which I think is always challenging when a guy isn't like super skilled. Like, he's going close enough to Jake Fraley, and I think Jake Fraley is just a much better player, a much better hitter than he is. So I think it's hard to see. I think that's a major question for me there. And then who was the last one? Sorry.
Alec Thomas.
And then Alec Thomas. I mean, if he hits, he's been hitting leadoff, right? Like, that's what the talk of the town is. Is that for now, correct? Yeah, so if he's hitting, Roster Resource now has Corbin Carroll up there. I think the thing for me last year when he came up was I just wasn't quite sure if he was good enough at anything, right? It's kind of like you look at the profile and it's like, even last year, he had 400 plate appearances, 8 home runs, 4 steals, .231. The batting average should be better with that K rate. Like, I think the BABIP's going to improve probably, you know, this year. So the average will go up. Projections range from 255 to 270, but there's not really enough power there. There's not really enough speed there either. And I think those players who are in kind of no man's land aren't necessarily very interesting. Like, there's generally not that next level. There can always be differences, but, you know, generally you need to have some sort of elite carrying skill. And it doesn't seem like, Thomas really has that at this point. He's still very young, so things can change. But, you know, until they do, I feel like there's some outfielders going here that I'd rather have than him. So I guess I'd say I'm out on Thomas, and then probably not too into Friedel, and Nolan Jones I think I'm out on too. But I like the other players that were mentioned.
Yeah, Nolan Jones, I was all in on early in draft season when it looked like he'd actually get a spot with the Rockies. And then as the draft season went on, the Rockies started rocking, and that just made it difficult for me. Then the final straw was the Moustakas situation. In a deep, deep format, I can still see a chance on Nolan Jones, but the love I have for him is not what it once was. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, I'm not there anymore. Bubba Thompson, I like definitely early on in the season when Leody Tavares is banged up. The speed upside there with Bubba Thompson. So I'm with you 100% on that one. TJ Friedel or Friedel, I don't mind in deeper formats. I liked it a lot earlier when he was supposed to lead off. Obviously, that's changed. So there's some questions there. But I think, that, like you said, Great American Small Park, it's the new Coors Field. So enjoy. No Alec Thomas for me. Just, you know, what we saw last year. Plus, he's playing a platoon with Kyle Lewis, who's actually playing really well this spring. And we know what Kyle Lewis can be if he ever finds it again. So I'll pass on that. Aristotle Garcia, I love. We talked about him. I want him everywhere. I think he's getting drafted too low right now. So, yeah, Aristotle Garcia would be the guy for me easily in this group. Don't mind TJ. And I like Bubba quite a bit as well. So,
who doesn't like a Bubba?
Yep. Hey, some people are crazy enough to like a Bubba. So it's all good there. All right, Drew at Fru underscore Dorte asks, which outfielder are the projection systems too high or too low on playing time? You have a sheet. Is it easy to find on that for you?
Oh, man. Who are they higher, too high or too low on playing time for?
Like, if you believe Corbin Carroll, they have him for like 122 games. He's going to play many more than that, like probably 140 to 150. That stands out to me just because I was looking at him a second ago. There's probably quite a few like that, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think with like Carroll, though, most of the projections that are in there right now, and they may have changed with the contract news, they mostly have him for 570 to 580 plate appearances, I think. So which I think is a fair assessment. I think, you know, Lars Nootbaar is one that kind of stands out. Let me just see, you know, one thing to be very cognizant of is as the projections are updating pretty regularly now. You know, a couple times a week with at least some of them. And so, you know, and the plate appearances is probably what's changing significantly. So before he was in kind of the 400s, he's now at the 500 plate appearances. You know, he strikes me as a guy who maybe is a little undersold on that. You know, like I feel like he's probably like the leadoff hitter against right-handed pitchers there. And then maybe plays against left-handers like further down in the lineup, like that bat plays, I think it's pretty good. I think that might be one where the projection systems are missing on him. And it's interesting. He's been kind of like the sweetheart, the darling of the draft season, but it feels like he was the darling of early draft season. And so it feels like he's now falling back where he was in the 170s. And now it looks like he's in kind of the 180 range. So he would be a player that maybe the projections are a little bit lower on, that they shouldn't be. You know, it's a lot of like these back end guys, I think. Geez, nobody's really like jumping out of my mind, honestly.
Yeah, the projections they're usually pretty good. It's only like a handful of dudes every year that just really looks bleak. And that's if you stared at projections long enough to notice that, pretty much.
Yeah. But I do think it's a really good question because I think that can impact value substantially.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about that before, that like adjusting playing time is kind of the game breaker between anybody's projection sheets, because we all plug in the same sources basically, but then you start adjusting to what you think it is, and that's how you get your formulas based, like your projections essentially.
Yeah, but I don't really change plate appearances. One guy, you know, Miguel Vargas, I think, is one guy where they're a little bit low on it. Although it's gone up recently, I think it's close to 550 now, or like 520 or something like that. It's hard to project, you know, because the thing is, like with plate appearances, is you have to, it's the median projection total. So if you have a rookie guy, you have to account for the possibility that he's not good enough and does poorly and gets sent back to the minors, right? So you have to factor all of those things in. But like one exercise to do is, you know, run Steamer 600 through there, you know, and see which guys pop out and who's overvalued. So those are some examples. I think the real challenge is that I think at this point in time in drafts, we're all optimists. Yeah. You know, we're all like, that guy I love is going to be the guy this year. I love him. You know, we're going to pump that up, and we really don't know. You know, like you may have guessed right last year. If you're consistently guessing right every single year who is that breakout player, then you don't need to worry about plate appearances because you're winning all the time, right? But I think I trust the projection systems generally, and then I'll look at it. I'll eyeball pitchers a little bit more. Like a good example is like Clayton Kershaw. I think his projection for innings pitched is way too high. I think it's at like 160 or something like that. I think it should much more be closer to like
125,
130, 135, something like that. Then there are some players that are kind of like underprojected. What I would do actually, like I think an exercise that I've noticed as I've been going through pitchers is look at players and then look at what the projected total is. So for instance, like there was one pitcher, I can't remember who it was, but all the projections were at like 150 for him for playing time. He threw like 130 innings last year. And then one projection system had him projected for like 85 innings. And I was like, why is that? And it's like, oh, well, they may think that he's going to pitch out of the bullpen, or that may be the analysis. And so in that particular case, that's one where I might override, where I'm like, this person is very clearly the number four starter on this team. You know, he's thrown 130 innings. There's no reason why you shouldn't even bump that up a little bit, because, you know, players generally go up a little bit, you know, if it's a younger player, for instance. And so that might be an instance where I'd override and go to 140. And I think that can have a pretty significant impact, you know, on pitchers. And I think that's a useful exercise to do as well. Yeah, for sure.
The other part of his question was, do we think Whit Merrifield gets back to 25 stolen bases this year?
Close.
I think so.
I do like Whit. Yeah.
I've been buying into him more and more as draft season's gone on, especially without platoon concerns. Like, it's interesting there in Toronto.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if there are, if he is platooned, I think it's going to be short side platoon. Obviously, he's towards the back end of that lineup, and that kind of sucks, but they're aggressive on the base paths. Like, that's the skill that he has. You know, the batting average, I've got to pull him up here. The batting average last year was, I think, pretty low. You know, I think the BABIP was much lower than it's typically been. You know, I just think that I think he'll be fine. And the risk is low enough, right? Like, last year he got 550 plate appearances and he wasn't playing that much down the stretch, right? The projections currently have him for 500 plate appearances. Stolen steals range from, you know, 16 to 23. And so at 500 plate appearances, I have Whit Merrifield. He's under second base for me.
Yeah.
So, I have him, he's way undervalued, I think. Yeah, I have him as player 169. He's going in the low 200s. So pretty significant, you know, value there. And that's only at 500 plate appearances. So obviously there's downside, you know, if he gets replaced, if he's not that great of he's not that great of a fielder. And so if he's not hitting or doing what they want him to do, maybe they give an opportunity to somebody else. I think that's a pretty low range in the range of possibilities, but there's also the possibility that he gets hot, you know, and he's on base a lot more and he's stealing and they're aggressive and he's hitting at the back end of that lineup. And then he's got Springer, Bo Bichette, Vlad, you know, Varsho, everybody else kind of following that. And so I think there's a wide range of potential outcomes, and that's why he's at 500 plate appearances, but still a pretty significant value there. So I do like him.
Yeah, I'm starting to like him quite a bit. I could see 25 steals. I think the biggest concern for me is he's like 34. So he's getting old. Like, when does that clock finally tick, you know, strike midnight situation? But I'll take my chances. I think there's a lot to like there. And, you know, what's to say he couldn't get 550 to 600 at bats when he plays every day again? Like, it could be fun. So I think it's definitely an option. Andy Splinter says, super late outfielders. Brian Anderson, he had an 8% blast rate in the second half, and Matt Vierling, a power speed combo that could be in for more playing time. Vierling got traded to Detroit in the Gregory Soto deal to Philadelphia. So what are your thoughts on Brian Anderson, who you're usually a big fan of, and Matt Vierling?
Yeah, I am usually a fan of Anderson. I just want to know, like, where he's going to be playing on a consistent basis. Yeah, I mean, I know he'll be there for sure, but but I mean, he does have some really good skills. Like, he's a relatively high contact guy. You know, he's always struggled with a few too many ground balls. You know, but you know, in the new landscape, maybe that's going to benefit his batting average a little bit. He's just one of those players that you're like waiting for him to make that one change that can really, really help him out a lot. But the batting average is typically, you know, pretty solid, like above league average. It wasn't last year, but, you know, 249, 255, 261, 273 in years previous to that. The barrel rate is pretty nice, 9.7%, you know, 23 barrels last year. Max EV is decent, and he's getting out of that ballpark. So he also can be shifted around the ballpark a little bit. So I think those are some opportunities for him. I don't mind that at all. Was there another player in the question?
Matt Vierling with the Detroit Tigers.
Oh, Vierling. Yeah, I generally like Vierling. I have him on my on a dynasty team. I was all over him last year. It looks like he's going to get pretty consistent playing time there. So yeah, you definitely have the potential for that power speed that was mentioned. I think the only challenge is like the power hasn't necessarily translated. Like last year, he had 13 barrels. Right, he was playing in a heavy offensive environment. He only had 13 barrels for his six home runs, you know, and seven steals. So it's one of those situations where I'm just not sure the underlying skills are quite that good enough. He did only have a 6.4% home run per fly ball. So maybe that's something that he can address. Maybe that's something that improves and kind of jumps that up. But typically projection systems are pretty good at identifying that. And they have been putting together a slightly better batting average, similar home runs, slightly more steals, which is probably accounting for all of the changes, the rule changes, but they see him as pretty much the guy he was last year. So he hasn't really been a target for me. He was last year again, when he was going like real late in DCs and stuff like that, but probably a guy that you can kind of plug and play according to matchups and take advantage of that, but probably not somebody you're going to want to have on your team all the time.
Yeah. He's two concerns with Vierling. I like the talent, the player playing Detroit home games, not ideal. Obviously, even with the stadium changes, I'm not buying in too much about that just yet. There's chances he platoons with, you know, his other teammate, Nick Maton, who got traded from Philly, could platoon in the outfield with Bedu or Kerry Carpenter or someone. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces in Detroit, still a lot of what ifs. Vierling's the best player out of most of those guys I mentioned. So we'll see if he does get the main run, but that'd be my biggest concern. I don't mind him late if you want to take a chance in a deep format. No Brian Anderson for me. I've never really been the biggest Brian Anderson guy, and now with that Milwaukee situation, I'm really confused on what's going on there with Brian Anderson. So I'll be a full pass on that one. Daniel Prepas has a fun question here. It made me chuckle because he has, what's the difference between Josh Naylor and Lamont Wade Jr.? And I know where he's going with this, because let's just have some fun here real quick. You have Josh Naylor, well, he doesn't have outfield eligibility yet, but Lamont Wade has an ADP of 438. I'm just going to speculate at the top of my head. Josh Naylor's got an ADP around like 180-ish, maybe 200 at the lowest. It's nothing crazy. So it's a big gap between the two. So I'll let you have the floor, Toby. What's your difference between Naylor and Lamont Wade before I give my Giants bias?
I think there's a pretty substantial difference between them. I think, you know, projection wise, there's about 30 points of batting average, between Lamont Wade and Josh Naylor. I'm not convinced that Josh Naylor is going to be platooned. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the kind of peak for Lamont Wade Jr. is, being platooned. So I think there's that. I think that, you know, Lamont Wade has a higher barrel rate, but I think Josh Naylor probably has more power potential than Lamont Wade Jr. because Lamont Wade Jr. Doesn't put the ball in play as much as Josh Naylor does, even though Josh Naylor struggles a little bit with like a high ground ball rate. So I honestly don't see them being equivalent whatsoever. But I may be a low person on Lamont Wade Jr. I know like some really smart people are into him. So maybe he can replicate that 381 plate appearances, 253, 18 homers and six steals with the dead end ball.
Yeah. What I'll say about Lamont Wade is I like the upside of Lamont Wade, but playing time is going to crush Lamont Wade. He is going to be a platoon player. He has to stay healthy. He didn't stay healthy last year. There's a lot of things kind of going against Lamont Wade. He's fun. It's interesting, but I think he's probably a mix between 2021 and 2022. So maybe like a two, like projections have him around 230. I could see 235, 240 is what I was thinking on a good year. 15 home runs, maybe. Like, it's cool. It's not bad. Not bad for his ADP if you can play the matchups, but he's tough to put in your lineup. Or Josh Naylor, I know I'm biased here, but I love Josh Naylor. I've been big on Josh Naylor for a long time. I loved him last year. 20 homers, 256 in 122 games. He's not going to get platooned a ton. They flat out said that even when they got Josh Bell. Like, they want him in the outfield. They want him at first base. They want him at DH. They want to keep him in the lineup whenever they can keep Josh Naylor in the lineup. So, I still think 130-plus, maybe 140-plus games are in the bag, some other 20 home runs. Counting stats will be good. It's if you just want to be simple about it, it's playing time. Playing time, Naylor will crush Lamont Wade Jr. And just in that alone, the counting stats will come. And like Kobe mentioned, the batting average will be much different. That's just not who Wade is. Wade is not a batting average guy. If he changed that, awesome as a Giants fan. Big fan of that. I'll believe it when I see it, is what it comes down to with Lamont Wade. So, like, I think Justin Mason said it on a Giants preview I did with him. Lamont Wade's great if you only count his stats from the eighth inning on. That's when he's great. That's when he shows up. He's called Late Night Lamont is what his nickname is. So, yeah, problem is we count the first seven innings too. All right, couple more questions here. Steve Brunn says, thoughts on Tyler O'Neill and playing time risk? We kind of hit on that earlier. You're on Tyler. My only concern is the playing time with Tyler. So I think we kind of hit on that already, actually. And then we have two questions in the chat I want to get to real quick here. One from Uncle Ted was, let me scroll and find it. Just because I know my answer, and it's one I've asked many people. Adelise Garcia or Randy Arozarena or Cedric Mullins? How do you look at those?
Oh, two? Randy Arozarena, easy. It's not even close to me.
Yeah, it's Randy and then Adelise and then Mullins for me. Yeah, it's pretty. That's the way I look at it. So we'll see how that goes. And then the other question we have here, it's non-fantasy baseball. I don't know if you pay attention to college basketball, but our buddy Britton Allen says, who is in y'all's final four and winning the NCAA bracket? Real quick, I'll just say Britton, I feel horrible because I haven't watched a second of college basketball this year. I used to watch a ton. The last few years, I haven't watched any at all. I don't even know who's like the favorites in this tournament right now. I have zero clue.
Yeah, is Boston University playing, my alma mater? Are they in it? I'd go with them. No, you want to know something? Here's a hack for the NCAA tournament. I know we all watch it and we're like, oh man, I know who's going to do well. I know who's going to do great. And some people probably do. But what I do is I just get like the KenPom rankings and I just go through and look at them and I just choose whoever has a higher KenPom ranking. There used to be a guy who would put out, he would do an analysis of like the percent chance of each team getting to different places in the pool. And I would just use that. I would just use that to figure it out. So what I would just do is rely on the machines or the people who are smarter than you to determine who's most likely to win and plug in that. And it's actually works pretty well and successfully.
There you go. Problem solved. Simple. Simple as that. Spreadsheet. Toby's going to use a spreadsheet to figure out his bracket. Just kidding. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Outfield review in the books. Final thoughts, Toby, on the outfield position.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I think there's pockets that I like. There's some nice stuff late. There's some nice stuff in the middle. Some really great players towards the top end of the draft. We didn't even touch on Kyle Tucker, who I think is fantastic as well.
One of my favorite guys. Yep.
Yeah. So I think all in all, you know, an interesting position. Good luck finding five of them.
Yeah, I almost did a Kyle Tucker versus J-Rod debate, but I want to start off with the fire flames coming out of this place. That would have been too much. But, yeah, it's fun. The outfield position is good. We kind of gave our thoughts on it early. It's a deep position, as always, but the depth and talent varies very much. So, like, know what you need. Know how to build your team. Good stuff in those regards. But we'll be back with you guys next week to wrap up our reviews of our previews with the starting pitching position. And then the following week, Toby, you'll be in Viva Las Vegas. So we'll get you ready. The season is almost here, folks. Make sure you follow Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BDentric. This is Bubba the BatFlip, episode 150. Catch you guys next time.
That's going to wrap us up for episode 246 of the Batflip Crazy podcast, in edition number 150 of Bubba and the Batflip, our outfield preview. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Hope everybody's doing well out there. Take care and be kind to one another. How do you know my?